supporting WHYY Penn Medicine, helping to find new cures for cancer. With life-saving clinical trials and advanced surgical techniques, Penn Medicine is offering more hope for patients everywhere. Learn more at PennMedicine.org/cancer. Penn Medicine, what's next?
Welcome to You Bet Your Garden from WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm your host, Mike McGrath, and we got a jam-packed show for you cats and kittens. In the question of the week, we'll talk about horse nettle, which looks a lot different than the name would make it sound. It's a poisonous plant that looks like a yellow cherry tomato. We'll also interview the co-founders of a great garden retreat where our wounded warriors can go to heal. That's a lot to get done, so we better hop right to your fascinating phone calls at 1-888-346-9499. John, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Hello.
Hello, John. How are you, sir?
I'm doing fine. You, sir?
I am just ducky today. Thank you, John. Where are you doing fine?
I'm in Middle Tennessee, Rockwood, Tennessee, to be exact.
Oh, okay. Very good. What can we do for John in Tennessee?
Well, about 3 years ago, I moved to Tennessee, and I got into planting peaches, and I planted some bare root trees. The trees are doing fine, but I'm still learning about the diseases and problems with them. One of the problems I was having, the peach fruits look beautiful, grow big, but the seeds disintegrate inside and fall apart and cause some of them to rot, even though some you can cut the fruit off and it's fine. But some of them, it causes the rot from the inside out being rotting. I find every single peach, the seed disintegrated, falling apart in them. And I'm struggling to find out what could possibly be causing that problem.
Well, John, you realize you changed your name to Job when you planted peach trees, right?
I know it's a lot of work, but, you know, I'm always up to a challenge.
Okay, so how many trees you got?
I have five.
Okay, that's a good number. And do you prune them every year?
Yes, I did. I started pruning them, so I'm trying to keep them spreading not high, keep the centers cut out so they get plenty of light. And I'm not having a problem with them bearing. They bear fruit so much that I'm pulling fruit off because I can't have one every 2 inches down the branch. It breaks the branches.
Well, that's correct. You anticipate my next question. Do you thin the fruits? It's not that that's just happening on your trees because they like you. That's what happens on every peach tree, and you have to remove around 3/4 of the fruit to get started. Now, you're not spraying the trees with anything yet.
Well, I once they get bloom, I have a spray pattern I spray during the dormant season. These trees are now, this is their fourth year.
What are you, John, what are you spraying during the dormant season?
Well, I spray an oil-based spray, and I've been using neem oil,
okay,
which is an organic.
Yeah,
well,
yeah, no, that's cool. I think my best guess is going to be this is the oriental fruit moth. This is a moth that flies onto your developing fruit, lays an egg, and then a little caterpillar hatches out and immediately tunnels into the peach and always goes right for the stone, right in the center. And then rather than feed on the flesh of the peach, it drills into the stone. And this can cause the stone inside to collapse. And, yes, it can cause some black rot around the outside of the peach. So, but typically you see a little tiny entrance hole on these peaches that may have even healed over. And it's very tiny, but that's something you can look for. Anyway,
okay.
The oriental fruit moth, there are what are called mating disruptors that you can buy. Okay. These are pheromones that you put in your orchard and it confuses the moths so that they can't go to the prom and have a successful date.
Gotcha.
But when the peaches are small, you can also spray them with BT, the old original form of BT. That's safer than neem. And what happens with BT is any caterpillar that eats any part of the sprayed plant will immediately die as soon as it starts eating. So that would prevent these little caterpillars from getting past the outer skin of the peach. Although I personally, when I was growing all my peaches, I relied on Surround, S-U-R-R-O-U-N-D, which is just a clay spray. It's micronized clay. It looks like flour. you put it into your sprayer, you mix it with the right amount of water, you cover your trees with this stuff when you spray it, and it looks like Christmas trees in a department store. They turn silvery white, but it keeps insects off all part of the tree, and it actually prevents disease. All of my fruit-growing friends agree that if you're only going to use one thing, you spray it with Surround. You spray the trees with Surround a couple times during the growing season. And the nice thing about that is you don't have to know what's coming to attack your trees. Insects won't land on this, and diseases can't get past it.
Oh, okay, great. Surround. Very good. I'll look that up.
Okay.
Sounds good.
All right, John, you're doing great. I think Surround will be your savior next year.
Well, thank you very much for the information. I appreciate it.
Take care, man.
Bye-bye.
1-888-346-9499. Jasmine, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Hi, Mike.
Hello, Jasmine. How are you?
I am pretty good, besides the drought. How are you?
I am just ducky. Where is Jasmine dry?
We are south of Boston in a town called Cohasset, right on the coast in Massachusetts.
And that's not typically a dry region in the summer.
No, we're actually a very wet, I'm calling you from an organic farm, and we're usually very wet, and right now we're almost reaching Dust Bowl type error situations.
Well, you know, you got to remember that's in the Bible. That's why they made Job a farmer. You know, it's not it's not work for the timid. So is that what you're calling about, or something else going on?
There's something else. So we grow organic vegetables and flowers. Our flowers are for cutting and for bouquets.
Right.
And right now, besides the drought, my biggest problem is keeping the mice from eating the sunflower seeds after we plant them in trays. I plant about 700 every 2 weeks, and the mice go get in, they eat the seeds, they relocate them for us and put them in other cells and other places. We've tried building enclosures out of hardware cloth.
Right.
And we've been semi-successful with that, but we're still perfecting that system. And in the meanwhile, I was trying to think of another solution. And I had heard you mention a couple times about using castor oil to keep voles out of gardens. And I was wondering if I could water with a castor oil solution and to deter the mice, and if you thought that would work or if you knew of another solution.
Well, that's an interesting thought, the castor oil sprays and solids are sold for control of underground creatures, like specifically moles and voles, because it gives the soil a bad smell. But at the very least, it could confuse the mice, and it would do no harm, and it's organically approved. So that's, you know, there's no harm in trying. Now, I understand I've worked on these production farms, and I know just people who are home gardeners have a can't grasp the size of all the starts that are going in and out. Is all this work being done in a greenhouse?
We are actually outside the greenhouse right now because of the temperatures, but yes, in that vicinity.
And where's the biggest problem been occurring? Has it been early in the season when you're working in the greenhouse? Because I know once mice get established in a greenhouse, they can be the Rocky Horror Show.
Yes, so they were a problem this winter and spring in the greenhouse with our squashes, et cetera, and sunflowers, and they continue to be a problem now in the summer. Right now, I'm actually having more issues than I had before, and we have a farm cat. So,
I think you need about 30 more farm cats.
Yeah.
Now, you know, and I'm going to warn anybody who's a Buddhist or who doesn't like the thought of getting rid of animals permanently, they might want to turn the radio down for the next 4 minutes. What I'm going to suggest is there is a new generation of mouse and rat traps that are electronic. Have you seen them?
Oh, I think I remember you talking about them once. Please refresh my memory.
Yeah, these are boxes, but unlike the boxes outside of restaurants and dumpsters that are filled with poison, which are very dangerous, these are boxes with holes the right size for mice and rats to go into, and you bait it inside with peanut butter just like you would a snap trap, and they step on an electrified pad, and they're instantly euthanized. And it runs on, like, AA batteries, and they even come with a light. So there's a green light when it's just on, and there's a red light when you got one. And then you just, you can flip it out the back end and you don't have to look at it or anything. Then I think next season, you got to go full tilt boogie in the greenhouse. And you got to use every kind of trap you can find. I think these new electronic traps are much more effective. But I think you also have to use something like Tanglefoot on your bench. Make it one giant sticky trap, or glue boards, which I don't like, but you might have to resort to cut their numbers. And you know, I also want to direct you to the BIRC. Their web address is the letters BIRC.org, BIRC for the BioIntegral Resource Center. They have, they do journals on non-toxic and common sense pest control. So that's BIRC.org. Check their publications, check their online articles, and good luck to you. Well, it's time for me to take a little break and announce that I'll appear at the Delaware Home Show in Newark on Saturday, September 10th, at the Spring City PA Library on Friday evening, September 30th, and at the Fredericksburg, Virginia Home and Garden Show on October 15th and 16th. But don't go looking for all the details at the events section of our website just yet, because we'll be right back with the weed known as horse nettle, a garden retreat that helps our wounded warriors heal, and more of your fabulous phone calls. I'm Mike McGrath, and you're listening to You Bet Your Garden from WHYY in Philadelphia.
Support for You Bet Your Garden is provided by the Espoma Company, offering a complete selection of natural organic plant foods and potting soils. More information about Espoma and the Espoma Natural Gardening Community can be found at espoma.com. And by Burpee, celebrating 140 years of introducing unique new varieties and providing treasured heirlooms, hardworking hybrids, live plants, garden supplies, and more. Burpee offers no treated seed or genetically modified organisms. More at burpee.com.
Welcome back to You Bet Your Garden from WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm your rockin' DJ, Mike McGrath. Coming up later in the show, we will talk about the dangerous weed known as horse nettle. It doesn't really look like a nettle. It looks like a tomato, which is what makes it so dangerous. We're also going to take more of your fabulous phone calls. But now it's time to welcome our special guest, Ken and Julia Falk, who run the Boulder Crest Retreat for Military and Veteran Wellness in Bluemont, Virginia, and they are joining us through the good graces of WETA in Washington, D.C. Ken and Julia, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you very much.
I'll just start with you, Julia. Obviously, this is a gardening show. The only thing we've talked about is this is a retreat for veterans that uses horticultural therapy to try to heal the wounds we all know so much about.
That's correct. I'm a military wife, was a military spouse for 21 years. So that involves moving around a lot. And I'm English. I love gardening. So when you are moving around a lot and nothing's really permanent, it's a wonderful thing to be able to create a garden wherever you are, a small garden or a larger garden or a pot with something growing. And there's something very therapeutic about that. And we're lucky enough now to live in the Blue Ridge Mountains, and we have a nice large property and lots of gardens. Just bringing some of the veterans and their families out to our property out from Walter Reed during their recovery process from surgeries, we would bring them out to the gardens up at our house and just really see them enjoying the fresh air and the birds and the flowers. So when we built Border Crest, it was always, you know, a hope of mine that we would be able to have a garden there. So we were busy fundraising for the main buildings, and a garden was kind of far down on the agenda. But we were very, very lucky to get a grant from the Wallace Sannenberg Foundation to build an English-style walled garden on the property, which is completely wheelchair accessible, which means families and their spouses who may be wheelchair bound can go in and enjoy this absolutely fabulous garden that's been built there. They can enjoy it, or they can cut flowers, they can pick vegetables, they can sit and just relax and enjoy. There's a fountain there. It's just a really beautiful place to be. And because it's enclosed, it's sort of just a very tranquil, peaceful place to be, and we're very, very proud of it.
Well, any place in the Blue Ridge Mountains is going to be tranquil compared to Walter Reed. Let's be honest about that.
That is correct. That's what started it all, was bringing them away from the craziness of being up in the city. You know, a lot of these people are from rural America, and they're just not used to just the stressful life of being up in the city, especially compounded by the stress of what's going on with their family member at the hospital.
So, Ken, these veterans who are recovering at Walter Reed come out on day trips. Do they ever stay longer? I just heard Julia talk about families. Do families ever come out just to get a break when the loved one can't leave the hospital?
Yeah, so it's... things have changed substantially with the war winding down. The inpatient population and the outpatient population at Walter Reed aren't what they used to be. So we see a variety. We've had people from all over, literally all over the country, including Alaska and Hawaii, come to the retreat over the last 3 years. We've hosted nearly 2,800 people, which includes all the family members. And we have two major missions at the retreat. The first one is what we call family R&R, which is rest and reconnection stays. And those are family stays for 2 to 7 nights. And a family can come free of charge once a year. And they have to get there on their own and buy their own groceries. Other than that, everything at the retreat and our partners in the community, local golf courses, swimming pools, et cetera, are free of charge, which also includes time in the garden. The other 6 months out of the calendar year, we run a combat stress recovery program called PATH. And PATH stands for Progressive and Alternative Training for Healing Heroes. And the concept of PATH is really focused on bringing warriors home from combat and helping them create a life of mission and purpose here at home that allows them to live with, you know, a level of dignity and to give back to their communities where they come back to. And those programs, we have a Warrior Path program, which is technically an 18-month program, but 7 days of it residential at Boulder Crest. Then we have a whole family program, we have a couples program, and we have a caregivers program. And caregivers are normally young wives. Normally, there's some of them are moms and dads and brothers and sisters, but normally young wives whose husbands have had severe injuries, mostly amputations, blind, burned, paralysis, those types of injuries. And those programs all incorporate healthy eating and wellness and healthy lifestyles, and the garden provides, you know, several months out of the year, provides the fruit and vegetables that we can serve in our kitchen.
And how much of the PATH program involves a potential path to horticulture? Because I'll tell both of you, you're not our first guests in this arena. This is a very important topic to us, and we've had people on from several college programs that take returning veterans in the Yellow Ribbon program. I'm sure you're aware of that. And yes. Train them to become farmers, small-scale farmers.
That's right. And we don't do that. I mean, we have this beautiful 120 by 80-foot walled Victorian-designed walled garden that's handicap accessible. Two-thirds of the garden are what I would call more of a reflective space, place for meditation and reflection. And in the last third of the garden, furthest away from the buildings, is a series of raised beds that we grow fruit and vegetables in. So we're not really teaching, per se, how to be a farmer. What we're teaching is that you can live a healthy lifestyle and eat healthy, cheaper than you think you may think it is. And that's what we find a lot with families who are living in these, you know, right at poverty or just above poverty levels, where they think sometimes that the cheapest alternative is fast food. And we're here to show them that that's not necessarily the case. And we've had support from the Burpee Foundation and, as Julia said, the Annenberg Foundation that's really stepped up and built the garden for us. And we, you know, we had four families last year that were flown down from Ford Motor Company's fund from Detroit, Michigan, four inner city families, all led by combat veterans, the fathers and the kids in the four families had never seen fresh fruit grow on trees or fresh vegetables grow in a garden. And every day they went down and harvested eggs from our chickens and fresh fruit and vegetables to take back up to the house and also had some classes on how to cook the food and prepare it. So it really is a blessing to be able to teach that element of living to these families.
I can tell you for a fact, I mean, there's one way to change people's habits and make them lifelong lovers of gardens, and that's to have them walk around a really nice one for a week. I mean, that's worth 8 years of classroom instruction.
Right. I think just getting their hands in the soil, and at the end of the program with the children from the Ford Foundation sent to us, they were able to build a small herb garden. They were each given a pot and some soil, and there was a range of different herbs and things, and they were taught what they were and how they smelled and what they were used for in cooking, and then they were able to create their own one to take back home. And it was just fascinating watching them. They were just absolutely enjoying this, and they just had never had the opportunity to learn anything like that. I mean, I think if it was taught in schools at just a basic level, it would make a huge improvement in people's families.
And how do people find you?
Most of the time, the people find us through word of mouth. We've been connected to the wounded warrior, if you will, community for a long time. Julie and I, early in the war, I was a bomb disposal guy in the Navy. And early in the war, we started a small charity, which still exists today, and I'm the chairman of the board, called the EOD Warrior Foundation. And EOD is Explosive Ordnance Disposal. So since about 2004, we've been at the hospitals, mostly here, Walter Reed and Bethesda in the D.C. area. But so we've got to know a lot of people in the community, a lot of other nonprofits that work in the community, and a lot of people watch us as we put the plans together to build Boulder Crest Retreat, and we've had a big following. We've got the word out. A family comes to us, let's say, from Philadelphia, and they go back home to Philadelphia, and they share in their little networks of, you know, what we offer. We have families that come to us and for an R&R stay, and you know, the wife will come up to me and say, well, we'd really love my husband to come back and go through one of your PATH programs. And we get those types of referrals.
So, Ken, you had the most nerve-wracking job in the military, right? Somebody finds something. It didn't go off yet. Yo, get Ken over here. Right?
It's true.
Yeah. It's like, but it's kind of like gardening, you know, they plant these landmines and
no, that's my garden. That's, things do explode in my garden.
Mine too.
With much less impact. But I can't imagine a better balm to soothe those kind of mental wounds than to walk around in a garden, which is the exact opposite of an unexploded, potentially ready to explode device.
It is. And there's some great programs going on, you know, globally. There's a group of ladies that are growing saffron now in Afghanistan instead of poppy. And You know, there's bomb disposal guys like me that are clearing the landmines out of those fields so they can grow saffron. And
there's good money in saffron.
There is real good money. And, you know, and it's a great crop that offsets the drugs and hopefully can help solve some of those problems as well. But there's actually nothing better than watching a young kid from Detroit who's never seen a beet come out of the ground and watch him pull that out. That to me is very exciting.
Because one thing people who haven't been through this personally don't understand is the family can be as damaged as the veteran, if not more.
Oh, absolutely. We've had young families that have come out, and the cabins that we have are not just your run-of-the-mill cabins. They are absolutely beautiful. And the young family walk in, and we've had wives burst into tears to just realize that this has been done for them. So many people have come together to make this happen for them, to show these families that we care about them and we continue to care about them and they will not be forgotten. I think there's a lot of people that have studied the healing aspects of just being in nature, you know, especially when you're under stress or you just need to go and think. I mean, if you just go and walk in the woods or sit by flowers or listen to, you know, water running or bird singing, all of those things can really bring some calm to your mind and some clarity. And nature is a wonderful thing.
At the very least, you're kind of offering a takeout nature where you can
right.
where you can come and experience it for a while. And maybe that'll be your new life goal is to have a place like this where you can live eventually. Well, you guys are doing wonderful work in a great place. And where can people go if they want to learn more about the Boulder Crest Retreat for Military and Veteran Wellness?
So the best two places to go are our website, which is simply bouldercrestretreat.org, B-O-U-L-D-E-R. And then we have a Facebook page as well that has a lot of following, and that's a great place to watch us. And I think it's just Boulder Crest Retreat for Military and Veteran Wellness. If you search that, it'll come up.
Ken and Julia Falk are the co-founders of the Boulder Crest Retreat for Military and Veteran Wellness in Bluemont, Virginia. Thanks again for being on You Bet Your Garden, and thanks again for the great work you're doing.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us.
And now back to your fabulous phone calls at 1-888-346-9499. Robin, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Well, hi. How are you doing?
I am doing just ducky today, Robin. Thank you. How are you?
I'm wonderful. I'm calling from Pensauken, New Jersey.
I know it well. I used to walk to the Pensauken Mart from the Tacony Palmyra section of Philadelphia when I was a child. I used to walk across the bridge and go to the Pensauken Mart. It was a big deal.
Wow. Okay. Well, I've just moved back here after being gone for 45 years.
Mm-hmm.
And I've got my first New Jersey garden. And I've just got a couple of questions that have me flummoxed.
Sure.
The first thing is that my tomatoes are doing great, but my neighbors all water their plants almost every day, and I don't. And I'm trying to figure out how to tell when they're thirsty and when they're not. And I put soaker hoses around the base of all the plants.
That's excellent.
You've mentioned that you shouldn't water outside of the morning, and I wasn't because of leaf problems, but I wasn't sure if that applied to soaker hoses as well as, you know, the irrigation kind of things.
Much less so. Now, are you growing in raised beds or flat earth?
Flat earth.
Yeah. You got soaker hoses out there. So
mm-hmm.
Are they sweat hoses or drip hoses?
They're sweat hoses.
Okay. Get some sort of like a big dish, like a Pyrex dish you would bake in or something,
mm-hmm.
and put it, lift up one of the soaker hoses and put this dish underneath it. And then turn your irrigation system on
mm-hmm.
and see how long it takes for that dish to get about an inch of water in it.
Oh.
That's how long you want to run the system once a week. If you water every day, like you're foolish, let's say foolish, not the word I was thinking of. We'll use foolish. I'm being nice today. Like your foolish neighbors, the plants never develop a deep root system because they always have water right around the top of their roots. So they're lazy. They're slovenly. They play video games all day long. By watering once a week or so, the plants are always developing a strong root system. They're going to the gym every day.
Okay.
So water is good, but withholding water is better.
Okay, that's all right. And my second question involves pruning of vegetable plants.
What? No, you prune fruit trees.
Okay.
Why would you prune a vegetable plant? You barely got 90 days to get them growing.
Well, when I talk about pruning, I'm talking about my squash plants that have these ginormous leaves.
Yes. Do you know what those leaves are? They are solar panels. They are collecting the energy from the sun that fuels the growth of all of the plants on our planet. You will not improve the health of your plant by removing its solar panels.
Well, good to know.
And with the watering, make sure you pay attention to how much rain you got. I have a big wall calendar, and when we get rain, I write down how much we got. I got a little rain gauge outside. So if you get an inch of water every week, you shouldn't need to add water.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
All right.
Thank you very much.
Good luck, Robin.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Well, it's time for me to take a little break and remind everybody out there to deadhead your faded roses promptly. Pick your ripe tomatoes a day before you think you have to, and make sure your container gardens stay well watered during these traditionally hot and dry days of summer. Don't go performing all that pruning, picking, and pampering just yet, because we'll be right back with the weird tomato-like weed known as horse nettle and more of your fabulous phone calls. I'm Mike McGrath, and you're listening to You Bet Your Garden from WHYY in Philadelphia.
Support for You Bet Your Garden is provided by the Espoma Company, offering a complete selection of natural organic plant foods and potting soils. More information about Espoma and the Espoma Natural Gardening Community can be found at espoma.com. And by Burpee, celebrating 140 years of introducing unique new varieties and providing treasured heirlooms, hardworking hybrids, live plants, garden supplies, and more. Burpee offers no treated seed or genetically modified organisms. More at burpee.com.
Welcome back to You Bet Your Garden from WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm your host, Mike McGrath, and we're in the stretch now, cats and kittens. In just a little bit, we'll get to one of the weirdest weeds we've ever discussed, horse nettle, which has nothing to do with horses, does look like a nettle, but it is a poisonous member of the tomato potato eggplant family. We will warn you about it after a couple more of your fascinating phone calls at 1-888-346-9499. Jamie, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Hi there.
Hello, Jamie. How are you?
I'm good. I'm sweaty.
Okay.
I'm good.
Where is Jamie good and sweaty?
In Reading.
Reading, Pennsylvania.
PA, yep.
Oh, yeah, sure. Home of the Fightin' Phils.
That's right.
Great Double-A baseball team and one of the greatest minor league stadiums in baseball. I mean, I would urge people to go to Reading and in the middle of the summer and get a ticket in the pool that is in the outfield. It's
that's fun.
It's a great way to watch a ball game.
Yeah.
All right. What can we do for Jamie in Reading?
Well, I called because I have had a problem with these bugs in my garden for years, and I used to blame it on the box elder bugs.
Right.
But I discovered it's not them. I think it's the four-lined bug. It's in the spring, early on, I start to see these little tiny red nymphs. Or, you know, whatever stage that little guys, and they scurry and they make holes in all my herbs. I mean, these guys, they started in one kind of area of my garden, and now they're really everywhere, and they chew on all the things that nobody's supposed to like. They like lavender, they like yarrow, they like costmary, they like all the mints, they love the mints.
And then they turn into a different type of, quote, bug. They are true bugs.
Yeah.
That gives them their common name. They have four black lines on their back.
Right. And they're pretty.
Yeah, they're pretty awful. They are a notorious pest. And it's when we first started doing this show, every once in a while we'd get a call about from somebody who said they had these spots or rust on their mint plants.
Yeah.
And we would mock them going, oh, you're the only person in the world who can't grow mint, man. Take up woodworking.
That's right.
But once these pests get established, they can be really tenacious.
Yeah.
Now, the good part, as you probably have noticed, is they have a short life cycle here in the Northeast. They'll probably be gone from your garden pretty soon if they're not already. They don't stay around till the fall.
No, they're going down a little bit, and I know that they'll do that. But man,
yeah, I know. No, they are annoying as all get out.
Yeah.
So what I'm going to suggest is next year.
Yeah.
You know, because obviously this generation is pretty much shot.
Right.
Next year, I want you to take a multi-pronged attack. And by the way, are we gardening in containers, flat earth, raised beds?
No. So there are some things in pots, but mostly things are in the ground. And I try to grow a lot of herbs to, you know, to dry, to make tinctures out of.
Right.
You know,
and they ruin the look. They ruin the look of the herb. Although they're going to regrow nice new leaves for you now.
Yeah. Yeah.
First, I want you to, you know, maybe when the season is over, buy a couple of bird baths.
Okay.
On pedestals.
I have some of those, but
and
I can do more.
Set those up right in the middle of where you're having your bug problems.
Oh, okay.
So that the birds come in to get the water and they see your pests.
Okay.
This winter, I want you to put suet feeders out in the area to get meat-eating birds used to coming to your garden.
Okay.
When spring comes, stop filling the suet feeders and don't put out bird seed.
Okay.
So then
you feed them. Yeah.
Yeah. You fed them over the winter. They're nesting. They've enrolled the children in the local school district. They're not going anywhere. They've got the water that they need and they'll eat your bugs.
Okay.
Second, I want you to get, again, over the winter to be ready, get a good actual pre-made professional insecticidal soap spray.
Okay.
Don't go online and follow stupid recipes and try to make your own. There's a very fine line between insecticidal soap.
There's Payola or something like that?
There's a very fine line between insecticidal soap and herbicidal soap.
Okay.
So get a real commercially made insecticidal soap. There are also horticultural oils that are very light, that are made to be used in the summer.
Uh-huh.
Most horticultural oils are what are called dormant oils. You spray them on tree bark over the winter.
Mm-hmm.
But there are much lighter, refined vegetable oils that you can spray during the growing season. And any of these pests, especially in that larval stage, that you coat with the soap or coat with the oil, they will die, and you want to knock them down as quick as you can. And a combination of you doing that and bringing in the birds, you should greatly reduce their population the first year, and you should be able to eliminate them the second year. And once you eliminate them close to completely, you've broken the life cycle, and you won't have to deal with this again in the future.
Okay. That's great.
All right. Good luck, Jamie.
Thank you so very much. I appreciate it.
My pleasure. Take care.
Bye-bye.
1-888-346-9499. Jeff, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Hi.
Hello, Jeff. How are you?
Doing well. How are you?
I am just fine, sir. Thank you. Where is Jeff doing well?
Nashville, Tennessee.
All right. Very good. The music capital of America. What can we do for Jeff in Nashville?
Well, I have a lavender plant that I bought from the local big box store. I'm a amateur horticulturist, meaning that I plant something and hope that it will grow.
Right.
I have this lavender plant that I put in a concrete planter that sits on my back porch, which faces due east, which is where the sun comes up, of course.
Right.
It gets direct sunlight from 9:30 in the morning until about 1 o'clock in the afternoon.
Okay.
My problem is, or my question is, why does this plant grow at a 90-degree angle toward the morning sun?
Duh! Come on! It's like Willie Sutton said when they asked him why he keeps robbing banks. That's where the money is.
Okay.
Now, so, you realize if you have a house plant inside that sits in a sunny windowsill for 4 years, it's going to grow at a 90-degree angle. The problem, of course, with a concrete planter is, you know, you'll have to hire a chiropractor 24/7 if you try to spin this thing around. Is there a place in your landscape in the fall that you could transfer this plant to where the sun is more even?
The front part of my yard gets sun from, say, 11 o'clock in the morning as the sun comes up until the sun goes down, depending on the time of the year, of course.
Right.
It could get anywhere from 5 to 7 hours of direct sunlight a day.
Yeah, but that's, and I would say that wouldn't be a great spot for tomatoes or roses, which crave the morning sun. But lavender doesn't care, and it sounds like it would get more sun out there. And it would be in Nashville in the midsummer, it would be a hot, dry sun, right?
Right, correct.
And that's kind of the conditions that lavender is used to. Lavender is a Mediterranean plant. It thrives on good drainage. It really doesn't want a nutritious soil. It doesn't want to be fed or anything like that. And I think your conditions are just a little extreme in that by the time the sun gets good, so to speak, when it starts to get really good for the plant, it disappears. So I think your plant, in addition to leaning towards the sun, is getting a little what we call leggy. It's trying to get more sun than you're giving it, so it's growing up a little punier than it would if it got more sun. The plant would stay compact, and if it got to experience the sun crossing over the sky and hitting it from a couple of angles, it would stand up straight.
Okay. Now, is lavender a bush? Or a weed, or like I said, I'm an amateur horticulturist here.
Lavender is like rosemary. They are shrub-like plants from the Mediterranean.
Okay.
And there's all kinds of lavender, by the way. Rosemary is a kind of one-size-fits-all plant. But with lavender, you've got Spanish lavender, you've got English lavender, you've got lavenders that are pretty winter hardy. The only thing lavender doesn't like is really high humidity, or even worse, wet feet. If you put it in an area that doesn't drain well, the lavender will die off. Otherwise, it's a remarkably hardy plant.
Yeah, I've noticed that. You can't hardly kill it.
Well, that's what you were looking for.
Exactly, exactly. Thank you so much, Mike.
All right, good luck, Jeff.
All right, thank you.
All right, as promised, it's time for the question of the week. Horse nettle, beware the wild perennial tomato. Alexis Landis, producer of You Bet Your Garden, please read us this week's wild question.
I'd be happy to, Mike. Maisie in Lewis, Delaware writes...
Wait a minute. Isn't it Lewis?
Oh, stop.
Isn't it like Lewis, Las Vegas?
It is not. Behave. Well, Maisie says, we bought our first house 2 years ago. Lots of old trees and space to garden, but also horse nettle, which looks like potato or eggplant, but has spikes from the tips of the leaves all the way down to the soil. It spreads like crazy, and while pulling it out makes it go away for a little while and makes me feel good, she says, I'm only holding the line, not winning the fight. I found some advice at the Penn State University Extension website, but I can't find anything closer to home. What's the best way for me to control this tenacious weed? I'm more than willing to try a flame weeder, cut the little seedlings down, and or keep pulling. Thanks so much for your advice. So, Mike, the common name of this plant is horse nettle, but it looks like a spiny eggplant?
Kind of. When it's full grown, most people think it looks a lot more like a cherry tomato. And it is in the tomato, potato, eggplant family. The flowers and the young sprouts look a lot like eggplants. The leaves smell like potatoes when you crush them up. And the fruits look exactly like little yellow cherry tomatoes, but they are poisonous. It also has those nasty spines she mentioned. Hence the botanically incorrect, but helpfully informative common name that includes the warning word nettle. And it's perennial. In fact, its underground rhizomes are said to be as tenacious as those on running bamboo.
My goodness, where did this alien invasive monster come from?
Well, the Carolinas. It's native to the American South, and it's one of a surprising number of poisonous plants in the tomato family that are found in the United States, including Jimson weed, a.k.a. Angel's Trumpet, which is what you'll hear if you eat it, Black Henbane, which has gorgeous flowers but can be deadly to farm animals when it's growing in fields that are cut for hay, and the deadly Nightshade Sisters, Bittersweet and Black. But the same family also includes peppers, tobacco, and the famed Nicandra, or Apple of Peru, a tomato-like plant that has a long folk history of repelling flies. Nicandra isn't poisonous, but it is considered an invasive weed, although many farmers swear by its ability to keep flies away. Or maybe it just kills them. Nobody knows for sure.
So what does our listener need to do about her weird weed?
Don't plant any yellow cherry tomatoes if you're easily confused. Seriously, the bitter taste would make you spit this fruit out instantly if you did try one. Now, all of the literature on this plant agrees that herbicides are useless, and cultivation, especially with something like a tiller, would make the problem much worse, as it would cut up and then replant thousands of those little rhizomes.
Right. You once said that that's how they deliberately plant horseradish.
Yeah, they just till the field after they harvest, and all the little root bits they missed get chopped up, replanted, and there's enough of it there to fill out the whole field the following year.
Sounds like it's time for your rope-a-dope tough weed technique.
That's exactly right. Cut the plants down as soon as you can identify them. Force the roots to expend energy growing new leaves, but try not to allow any of those leaves to reach the size where they can achieve photosynthesis. You'll eventually starve the plant, which is pretty much used to being left alone to spread via its rhizomes and drop seed.
If you keep cutting the baby plants down, the roots eventually have to die. Could you use a weed whacker to keep up with the job?
Yeah, but you got to make sure to wear good shoes, long pants, and all that. You want to keep this toxic juice and the nasty spines off your skin.
And what about using a flame weeder?
Not right away, but in year two, after I would continue to cut the plants back until we get to a hot, dry stretch in the summer, then I would use a flame weeder to toast the newly emerging baby plants, or spray them with a non-toxic herbicide like herbicidal soap or one of those new iron-based broadleaf herbicides. But you gotta knock the plants down for a full season first so that these new sprouts that are emerging are small, weak, and somewhat vulnerable. Another alternative, of course, is to solarize the soil, but you have to do it exactly right. You can't cowboy it. What you would do is you would keep cutting them back now, then scalp the area in the spring, really saturate it with water, and cover it tightly with 1 or 2 mil thick clear plastic. As we describe in detail in the soil solarization article in the A to Z Garden Answers section of our website. It'll take a full growing season to do this in Delaware, but the underground rhizomes will be really most sincerely dead by fall.
And is she right to try and find advice that's more local than PA's Extension Service?
No, her conditions are the same. Come on, you can step into Delaware from places in Pennsylvania. What you don't want to do is take advice from a state that has wildly different growing conditions, like California or the Dakotas. I want to give a shout-out and special thanks to Richard Dickinson, France Royer, and everybody else at the University of Chicago Press for their fine work on the massive 2014 book Weeds of North America, which helped greatly with this week's article. And luckily for those of you who wish to review that enlightening article, the question of the week appears in print at the Gardens Alive website. To read it over in detail, just click the link for the question of the week at our website, youbetyourgarden.org. Gardens Alive supports the You Bet Your Garden question of the week. Yikes, my producer is threatening to nettle my horse if I don't get out of this studio. We must be out of time. But you can call us anytime at 1-888-346-9499 or send us your email, you're tired, you're poor, your wretched refuse teeming towards our garden shore at garden@whyy.org. Please include your location the first time, or you and I will get trapped in an endless email loop. Oh, and please include your location. And visit our website, youbetyourgarden.org, where nobody cares where you are, but where you will find the answers to all of those garden questions you were going to ask us, audio of this show, past shows, and our podcast. Elizabeth Perez Lunas, executive producer of audio content for WHYY. Ken Queter plays our theme song. Our engineer this week is Bob Alls. Our social media director is Amanda McGrath. Check out her fine work at the You Bet Your Garden Facebook page. Rich Banowitz and Sarah the She-Devil Kazar keep our website nettle-free. Nettlesome Al Banks is our editor. Never spiny Alexis Landis produces You Bet Your Garden for WHYY in Philadelphia. Weed-free Emma Bixler is our extraordinary intern. I'm your spiny Norman of the airwaves, Mike McGrath, and I'll be out whacking my own woeful weeds until I can see you again next week. Yellow insects flying in and out of a garden wall might be dangerous yellow jackets or a colony of escaped honeybees. I'm Mike McGrath, and on the next You Bet Your Garden, we'll discuss how to tell what you got and what to do about it. Plus, your fabulous phone calls.